Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Hello and welcome to The Promised Land, the show about Manchester United and part of the 90 Min Podcast Network. I'm Scott Saunders, joined by Rob Blanchett. One more Premier League game to go before this miserable season finishes.
Yeah.
Although there's the prospect of an FA Cup final win over Manchester City on the horizon, or more likely a heavy defeat. How exciting.
Very exciting.
Robert, are you glad it's coming to an end?
Look, we've all experienced arduous seasons with Manchester United in the past, haven't we? But yeah, it's kind of quite nice that we're coming to the end of this campaign. I actually have kind of optimism for the future, Scott. I really, really do, especially with the change of ownership and everything. But you just want to get this over and done with now, I think. The season's been a failure. That's just the truth, whether you lean on the side of it being down to injuries or whatnot. But yes, just kind of looking forward to the end. We'll get the Euros done in and out of the way, and then we'll be back into pre-season. We've been pre-season, Scott, before you blink. Like, oh, we'll sit this at the end of the season. We'll just go, oh, a little bit of a break. And then pre-season comes and we're working straight on it. And we're like, okay. So yes, let's get it over and done with. Kind of just put a cross next to it and carry on.
But who will the manager be? We'll be talking or speculating on that a little bit more today. Sorry, I know we've done this for a few weeks, but I mean, it is the most pertinent question around United
breaking
at the
news.
Moment. And obviously on Friday morning, we have had some confirmation from the horse's mouth. Thomas Tuchel has confirmed that he will leave Bayern Munich despite suggestions and intimations that he might end up actually U-turning on the decision that he made or Bayern made to let him go from his contract. So that means he's a free agent. That means the inevitable speculation of chats with Man United perks up. On the other hand, you've got Erik ten Hag, who has changed the style over the last two matches. And it feels a little bit more evident. I know we saw United lose to Arsenal at Old Trafford on Sunday. They were general positive shoots of that performance. But then obviously in midweek, United played Newcastle. United gave up lots of chances, but they ended up winning the game. And they did have a lot more control, actually, in possession and in moments, and the basketball was at a minimum. So obviously the speculation is, what's Jason Wilcox said? Yeah. Erik ten Hag is he showing that he can do it differently? Is he weak for changing the way that he's playing? Lots of questions like this. We'll talk about those today. But obviously now that with the news of Thomas Tuchel leaving Bayern, the speculation is going to continue. United have not had a good season. There's the obvious suggestion that, oh, Ineos are coming in. They're going to do it their way. They might get their own coach. And Thomas Tuchel is one of the best coaches in Europe. So is it a match made in heaven? We'll talk about that today. We talked about it over the last few weeks as well. But sorry, Rob, I've had 3 hours sleep over the night.
Scott. I've been having sleepless nights. Maybe it's Manchester United in our blood.
Yeah, I'm trying not to ramble. So if I come across rambly, I apologize, everyone. But we'll do our best to get through that. We'll look ahead to the Brighton game as well. We'll do the FA Cup preview next week. Can United finish in the Europa League places?
Yes.
Can United finish in the Conference League places? Or will United have no European football at all for a week at least? Or will United have no European football at all? Obviously, We know that if United win the FA Cup, they will end up in the Europa League, regardless of where they finish in the Premier League. Mm-hmm. But they have a job to do. They go to Brighton, Chelsea play Bournemouth, Newcastle at Brentford, and obviously all these teams are fighting over sixth place. What a prospect.
Wonderful. The battle for six. Yeah. It's always a thing, Scott.
That's where the drama is. That's what you want to be fighting.
I know. It's always at the start of the season when we write the headlines and we do our predictions that you always hope that Manchester United are not in the battle for six. Like, it's one of those things that you kind of cringe at. But here we are. This is the reality. This is what we have to deal with.
Have you managed to catch yet? It's only been released today, the 99 documentary.
No, not fully. You were invited to it, weren't you?
I was. I didn't end up going, so I had to wait. It's very good.
You could have gone and schmoozed with Bex, you know.
I should have. I really should have. But I was at the Football Writers Association Awards dinner last night. So that was nice, interesting.
Oh, that explains the 3 hour sleep.
Mm. Yeah. No drinks, really? I had one. One drink and two drinks, one beer and a champagne and lots of water. But it was very, very hot in there. So
who did you meet in there? Anyone interesting at all?
I would just say David Ornstein is the nicest bloke in the world. Like, he's just generally very, very nice. And then he swanned off to do his do what he does. But very nice guy. Lots of people there, lots of recognizable faces, lots of awards, lots of good quality. And just a generally good night. So it was nice to be there. And we move on. We'll see you next year. But the big representation was not from the United side of Manchester. There was a whole Manchester City table dedicated because Phil Foden and Bunny Shaw, who both play for Man City, won the men's and women's individual awards. So Phil Foden wasn't there, but we have we've done an interview on 90 Min, which has just dropped this morning with Phil Foden. And Bunny Shaw as well was there to receive her award in person. So, yes, interesting stuff.
There. That's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, I know they're preparing for a game, but...
Mm. Yeah.
Like, you know, you have got things like called private jets that can kind of get you in and out of London quite quickly. So, quite interesting that he wasn't there.
Preparing to win the league for the fourth time in a row. Breaking
a major award, you know, for him. So,
yeah. Sorry. I don't mean to ramble. I'll try my best to get through this, but as you can probably understand, when you don't have much sleep, it's a bit difficult. But subscribe to our audio show on Apple and Spotify. Give us a 5-star review and watch us on YouTube. We can like the stream, subscribe, leave a comment, and hit the notification bell so you never miss a show. And follow us on social media at @_ScottSaunders, @_Rob_B, and @TPLMUFC on X. Let's get going. Look back to start with. We'll come on to tactical Tommy in a little bit, but let's just is that a bit mean?
I'm gonna ban you from saying it soon.
It's not even my saying.
If he comes to our football club, we'll find another nickname for him. Tom. We'll just call him Tom or something. I don't know.
Tom.
You know, or Tommy Tooch, you know. But yeah, it's funny, isn't it? This morning when we kind of planned the show and stuff. We were looking at doing something, obviously, post-Newcastle, talking about the system, talking about Eric, the opportunities for him to stay. But in the last week or two, I think a lot of the noise coming out of Germany and stuff that I've heard directly is that obviously that Bayern Munich were very receptive to keeping Tuchel. And, of course, that will change this morning. Not that Bayern do not want Tuchel, but of course that Tuchel does not want Bayern. So that definitely changes the whole picture for us. Our football club, because it's a different reality again, Scott, isn't it? It means that Ineos now have another option that maybe they didn't have 24 hours ago.
Like I said a few weeks ago when we first talked about this, I think he wants this job. I felt like he's wanted this job for a long time, and I don't want to, like, I'm sure he loves Chelsea, even though it finished in relatively difficult circumstances, but I think the job that he would like. United and Liverpool are just, like, you know, prestige-wise, still levels above, aren't they? So it would not surprise me at all, but we'll talk about the benefits of Tuchel and the benefits of keeping Ten Hag. I know that, like, people who listen to this and watch the channel are quite split on it, as generally the United fan base are, but obviously Ten Hag is arguably, well, in a lot of people's minds, dropped the ball this season or just kicked the ball up one side of the pitch and just watched it come back at him, like, you know, over and over again. That's his decision. Obviously, he's not had the support the entire time. But what he has done in the last two games is, there's a visible difference in the style for me.
I would just describe it profound, Scott.
Yeah,
for me.
Profound, visible. I've been talking for most of the 9 minutes that we've been on so far, so I'll pass to you in a second. But what Jason Wilcox has come in, it's only speculation, but there's a conversation to be had. Have United got together and said, this is our new game model. Eric, can you show that you can do it? Because we don't like what you're currently doing. Is that fair?
It's I think, accurate. So Jim Ratcliffe told us a month ago, very, very, very specifically, he said, we will decide the style of play, and whoever our coach is, the coach will coach the team towards that style of play. Now, I don't think that Sir Jim is sat there like some kind of Twitter tactico making up formations and going, here you go, manager, do this. I don't believe that at all. But there's no doubt that Ineos have had months now, Scott, to kind of decide already about what they think Man United should be like going forward. That's why you bring in a technical director. Technical director's job is to work with the board towards the manager and find a style of play, find a system, work with it, and tell the coach, this is what we want. Now, what we saw against Newcastle, Scott, specifically, but as you said the game before as well, is that this didn't look like an Erik ten Hag thing. It didn't look what he was trying to do on the football pitch and actually worked quite successfully. You beat Newcastle 3-2. These were not really tactics that Erik has kind of put any time into this season. Like, not at all. Erik has tried a different way, a way that hasn't worked. You know, his 4-1-4-1 has not worked. We've done 1,000 shows on it. We don't need to do any more on it. But the whole point is, and again, I put a tweet out on this the other day after the game, and I think it really does show maybe the knowledge gap, I think, with some fans, is about what does actually a technical department do at football club? Well, technical department is supposed to do this. It's supposed to sit down with the manager because the manager works for them, not the other way around. Jason Wilcox is not coming to help Erik ten Hag. Erik ten Hag is coming to do Jason Wilcox bidding. Jason Wilcox and Dan Ashworth will make all of this project up. They will decide what's going to happen every corner and every crevice. So I think you're totally right. And I think that's the way to look at it, is that Jason Wilcox has been in the building now a couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks, hasn't he? What was the game, Scott? When his first game you were at, wasn't it? Jason Wilcox was there. Is that right? Which one was it?
I can't remember.
You saw him in the mix zone, didn't you? And you said that he said, well, that was an interesting first day at work. Yeah. And that might just sound like nothing.
But wasn't it? It was the FA Cup semi. I think it was
the semi final, Coventry. Yeah, which was a ridiculously mad football match for Man United, wasn't it? It was like, you're 10 times better than that team. Deal with it. So he's looking out on day one, going, "Wow, like this isn't going to carry on under my watch." So I do think they've had those discussions, and I don't think he's telling to Erik, right, you slightly position Aaron Wan-Bissaka to this side here, and I don't think he's not the manager. He's not the coach, but he's absolutely taking the vision of what Ineos want and saying, right, we need to do this. And there's no doubt, Scott, my God, it worked so much better. That's why I call it profound. System was so much tighter, solid, less gaps between players, just better, better, better. But just the same, Scott, that it happened in the last game of the season at Old Trafford. That's just a shame, really, because I think if we'd done this at Christmas somehow, I don't think we'd be talking about the battle for sixth.
So I'll play devil's advocate. Is Ten Hag weak for changing his system, as has been he's been accused of being?
Absolutely not. No. Because this is all about working together. You know, when we talk about collaboration, is that the manager might be there, but we get again caught between this world of where we think every manager is Sir Alex Ferguson. Yeah. And they're not. They are part of a bigger, wider team. As we said, Scott, months ago, is that Erik ten Hag's not actually at the top of the pyramid. He's somewhere slightly down, like above the team, obviously, but in the middle of the chain of command and communication and the hierarchy. So the fact that he's taken on board what his bosses want, and he put a system out there and a team out there that beat Newcastle United, who have been in pretty good form in recent weeks, climbed the table, haven't they? They look better. Had a really good game against us, actually. I thought they played well in Newcastle and very unlucky to lose. But that's actually, for me, it's not weakness, that's strength. That's exactly in any business what you want. You want your people to work with you, come with you on the journey. Because if Eric stays at this football club, Scott, he's got to come on this INEOS journey. He can't be a man on an island. He can't be Jose. You know, he can't be Jose shouting and screaming and saying no, because you just get sacked. You just go. It's finished. But of course, we were going to do that show today. And suddenly we see that there's Thomas Tuchel in Bavaria having his press conference categorically saying, goodbye, Bavaria. I'm off. I'm not staying at this football club. So I think for Eric, you know, he changed it. But is it too late? Potentially.
Well, the question on Tuchel then, I don't know how, well, let's get into it. Is Thomas Tuchel the manager who's going to play the football that everybody wants to see? Because he doesn't strike me as that.
Well, let's look at the systematic thing that changed the other night and then apply it to Thomas Tuchel, because I think this is the way to look at the Rubik's Cube. United the other night played with a false nine, decided to put Bruno Fernandes playing dropping deep. Played 4v4 at the top end, Scott. So that was their press rather than playing their 4-1-5, which has been a mess. 4-1-4-1, it's been a mess for months. And guess what? It worked. You played 4v4. It meant the ball got into midfield. And then you had Amrabat there to meet it with Cobby. And you had a flat back four. So that system being condensed worked really, really well. And it was an entertaining game of football. I don't know what you thought. I thought it was an entertaining game of football. And guess what? Man United got the 3 points. That's exactly what Thomas Tuchel will do. That's it. Thomas Tuchel will be compact. He will get United pressing at the top end in the right areas, and they won't be frivolous. They won't lose the ball. And again, I think this is the whole thing. We've spent a year and beyond saying that Man United's footballers are so inept and incompetent that they can't pass the football. But yet, if you close the spaces down, Scott, and make them closer together, then they're not going to lose the ball as much. So that's what we saw against Newcastle. So I think Thomas Tuchel is not your most expansive coach in the world. Of course not. But can Thomas Tuchel put a really quality system out there that wins football matches and keeps you tight and make sure that you don't leak goals? 100%. So it almost felt like the other night that was more of a Tuchel system than it was a Ten Hag one. Absolutely. It was that there was no space in midfield and all you did was drop Amrabat in there. So I think the thing is that I don't think that as a technical department, Jason Wilcox and Ineos are going to be looking at that and being too worried about, will this guy play football that excites fans? I think they're going to say from the get-go, we need to stop losing games. We must stop losing games. We have to start winning games because that's the only thing that pays the bills. So I think that's where we are, Scott, is that you've got Tuchel, who's done a really good job at Bayern the last few weeks to the extent where his football club were desperate to retain him. And they were kind of a bit sick that obviously that they'd let him go, or they said they were going to let him go because they honestly thought they got Xabi Alonso in the bag. So Thomas Tuchel was not a bad coach. Like you described him as one of the best coaches in Europe. He's one of the best coaches in the world. He is. He's up there. He's in the top echelon and he's earned that moniker over many, many years. And I think for Ineos, that's the decision now is, do you stick with the guy who's failed for a year and hasn't done what maybe you'd expect him to do? Or do you go with something new? And I think new shiny toys do excite new boards. Like it's just the nature of the game. But it's not a coach where you're taking a risk on his CV. It's someone that you kind of know what his body of work is. And if he applies that to Manchester United, then it's like buying that one player, Scott, that changes your team. You know, that actually can just come in your team and do these 10 things that all your other players haven't done. I mean, Tuchel might be seen as that. As a replacement for Ten Hag.
We did say a few weeks ago when we last talked about Tuchel as well, obviously the difference really with Ten Hag is he's essentially made his mind up on a few players already.
Absolutely, yeah.
Talking about Sancho there, really, you know, you cannot see a way back for Jadon Sancho in any case. And I understand that there's fans out there that still look at Jadon Sancho and think, I'm not forgiving you for how you behaved, regardless of who the manager is. I think we all agree that like something in that squad needs to change, that a lot of overturning needs to happen, new signers need to be brought in. But Tuchel bringing him in strikes you as the maybe the one coach out there at the moment, really, who can work with the most tools that are currently there. Definitely. And I think I said a few weeks ago, you only really need three first team 11 signings if everyone's fit.
Yeah.
To be like, okay, United should be playing in the way that Tuchel wants to play. They should be like, you know, pretty solid, and you should see a drastic improvement, because United should not be the eighth worst team or eighth best team in the Premier League. But also, were they the third best team in the Premier League last year? I don't know. Maybe they're somewhere in the middle. But like, if you can continue adding what you need to that 11, they should be in the top four conversation. They're rich enough to do it, even with all the PSR issues they have. They should be in that conversation. And then it's a couple of signings away from being able to compete for, I won't say compete for titles, because I think it just takes a little bit of a different energy in terms of like the points you have to get each season. But like, the quality's there, you know?
Definitely. So. And I think the thing is, there's football is both complex and simple. So two things can be right at the same time. I say that all the time with football. And that is the thing. I think the thing is with the squad is that players can fail repeated times, but then you have to find ways to help them win or to help them be better. And I think this season, that's something that I think that has been missing. You know, that's a criticism of Eric. And I think, you know, say when you talk about Thomas Tuchel or any new manager coming in, is that you kind of brush away the cobwebs, don't you? Like, you know, it's kind of cleaning up, spring cleaning exercise, where you go to everyone and playing squad that remains, right, fresh start now. Like, you've told us what you didn't like about the last manager. The manager's told us everything about you guys. So now it's a fresh start, and we start with this guy, and that's it, because he's our guy, and that's all we have to talk about now. We don't talk about the past. You just said about Jadon Sancho. Like, I know that Man United fans look at Jadon and they react to him like, I don't know, like an ex-girlfriend that's cheated on them or something, and that they've turned on their Instagram and seen them kissing their best mate or something. At the end of the day, this is a profession. It's about professionalism. And United will either go and get a good fee for Jadon, or I say good fee, a fee for Jadon Sancho in the summer, or someone like Tuchel could come in and say, well, do you know what? He fits my system. Because we know it doesn't fit Ten Hag's system. Like, that's, we know that. We don't need to see any more of that, do we? We don't have to ask that question. So I think that is, you know, you got Jadon in the Champions League final. Like, as we've said, I know not all these things matter, but they do, because people see them, and Jadon wins them that final somehow, I don't know, or has a really good game. He suddenly becomes hotter properties. You either sell him or you bring him back. But I think with Tuchel, you can apply this to a lot of players, Scott. Like, you know, Marcus Rashford is one of them. You know, these players have not played well this season. And we always put it on the player, and I think you have to an extent. But the system has hurt the team this year, and I described it recently as that I think 4-1-4-1 has killed the team. I really do, in their effectiveness, their productivity, the spaces on the pitch. So you need someone to come in, Scott, who immediately fixes that, but then says to everyone, fresh start, lads, like, we don't talk about last year now. It's finished. Like, it's gone. That bad season has gone. You just said there. Man United last year were definitely a top four team last year, Scott. This year, they've definitely not been a top four team. So you have to ask why that regression has happened, and not just say injuries. There has to be other things, because we've seen that tactically they've not been good enough. So that's where you then start talking about coaching.
As Ten Hag's turn done come too late? In a sense, I generally don't know. Like, I wake up each morning and I think something different. Like, I generally don't know what they're going to do, and I don't think anybody really does.
I'm not against Eric staying. You know, like, I think I have to put our kind of flag in the mast there. Both you and me, I think, are on the same page with that. Is that we're not against Eric staying if Ineos say, right, we're going to carry on, we're going to do our project like this, and Eric Ten Hag is going to do it like that. And I think if Eric does it like he did against Newcastle, Scott, and can turn that into a year's worth of football after the summer, after pre-season, then I'm with it. I'm down with it. Otherwise, I'm not. And it's as simple as that. It's a business decision. You either set the team up properly to play proper football. If you carry on playing 4-1-4-1 transition and leaving the midfield open, then there's no time to carry this on. Because it just means you'll get sacked anyway somewhere down the line. So that's why I think Tuchel does become maybe the attractive proposition in this scenario, even though, like, he doesn't play the prettiest football in the world. But he will absolutely get United winning games, I think, and playing more sustainable football. And then, Scott, you can look at it like, say, a two-year project with Tuchel. You could say, right, in 2 years' time, then we evaluate where we are, 1 or 2 years, and maybe we want a more expansive style of football and we don't think Tuchel's the guy, then you do find that coach who does. You can groom the next coach. You can look to Kieran McKenna maybe down the line and say, oh, he's more progressive. He more, you know, he does things like this and he's had a year or two in the Premier League. So now we go to that manager. It's almost like players, isn't it? Like, you don't buy a player, Scott, just to keep them for 10 years. Like, you buy a player to help you in that year and the following year and hopefully beyond. It's the same with coaches, really. And I think someone like Thomas Tuchel, there's no one on the market at all who has the outstanding kind of CV that he does and the experience. And like you said, I think he's desperate to come back to the Premier League. Like, we've heard this directly from his camp and beyond, that, you know, he just loves England. He'd love to be back in England. I know with Chelsea, you know, say he loves Chelsea. I think he loves London. And that's always the thing. I think a lot of people come to England and they fall in love with London. And that's why they stay or want to stay. Jose Mourinho is definitely that kind of person. Manchester may be a little bit different. But United can offer him other things, can't they? And certainly in terms of stature and grandeur. And if he's the guy that gets United winning, I will say this, you know, it's again another very seductive thing for football people, that you can be part of that story of Manchester United and you can get them to be a winning entity again. That's another big tick on your CV in the future if you do that.
You did say earlier Bayern want him to stay, and I think that is the case. But he has literally been this sixth option, and they have tried and failed trying to attempt to bring other managers in after initially making the decision that he wasn't the right coach for them. So, like, I like him. I think he's a good coach. I've never really thought of him as like the perfect fit, but in terms of like where United are now, now feels like a better time than it's ever felt to me. But I agree with you on the 2 year thing. Like, even if he does come in and United do decide to go in that direction, I don't feel like it's going to be a Klopp level stint or anything like that. I feel like there will be some point in the end where it's going to turn sour, and I don't know if that's the right approach. So, like, it's really challenging because I just don't know what the right answer is. But I suppose I have a little bit more confidence now that United are employing people that know what they're doing, and I'm going to trust in the decisions that they make instead, rather than trying to, you know, United have run for the last few years. I think people are just so done with that decision-making process that we're just glad to see that there's football people actually coming in to make football decisions.
Yeah, like, and also I think this is the other side of it, is that, like, when Ten Hag came to the football club, and this is where Twitter becomes a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy over and over again, because people look at tweets from 5 years ago, 2 years ago, whatever, and everyone's like, oh, well, Ten Hag was the guy 2 years ago and now he's not. No, it's not about that at all. It's about the body of work and where you are. And I always think that with a coach. I always say with a coach, you give them 1 to 2 years to just see what happens. It would be the same with Tuchel, is that there's no negative connotations about hiring a coach like Thomas Tuchel. Like, he's managed some really super big clubs. He understands expectation. He's got that in his locker. So I don't actually see the negativity around any of that, because I think if in 2 years' time, say he's done well, then you stick with him and carry on. That's no problem with that. But I do think that we're at this kind of crossroads with the football club, with Ineos and the technical department, is that we now have a technical department, Scott, you know, actually have a vision of what they want the business and the football club to look like. And they're going to go down that route. And I think it just comes down to, do they think that Erik ten Hag in the last 12 months has done a good job? Technically speaking, the answer is no. But if they like Erik and think Erik's past record can be something that they project in the future with Manchester United, then I'm fine with keeping him, because I still don't think Erik ten Hag's a bad coach, and I never have. I still don't think, like, Erik proved against Newcastle that he can put a cohesive, coherent team out. And I just wish that Erik had done that months ago, because we were crying out for it, Scott. Banging our fists on the table here, saying, please put the team out in a coherent fashion, manager. You're better than this. And we were losing games to worse teams because we were setting up so poorly. And everyone just went, oh, there's a lot of injuries. It's like, yeah, we know there's injuries, but these players are still on 200 grand a week. Like, come on, put something out there coherent. So did against Newcastle, Scott, it worked. Hopefully we see that against Brighton as well, maybe in the cup final. And then there is a chance that Erik stays, but I just think the whole fact that Bayern and Tuchel now will be in this divorce that it is finished is that Tuchel, if he wants to stay in football, doesn't want a break, then there's really only one job in world football, isn't there? Like, let's be honest, there's not another job just sitting there for him today where he can go, that's where I'm going to go. Like, Chelsea sacked Pochettino, which they won't do now. Then you could have envisaged Tuchel back at Chelsea, maybe, or say Spurs or someone like that. If Ange was going out of that football club, that's quite funny, isn't it? The Ange thing and Tottenham. But there's not.
Do you want to talk about that for a second?
Yeah, let's do it. Should we do it? We said we'd do that.
This is not a Tottenham podcast, but like we might go off in a little bit of a different direction.
Yeah, we'll do a bit of it.
Do we really want to talk about if United beat Brighton to finish seventh? I don't care. Do you care?
No one cares about that. Like, I think it's La La Land, the Premier League. I spent the whole season, Scott, saying to you and I'm not looking at the league table. I still feel like that now. It's just when we got to the end of the season, it's like, yeah, we'll finish somewhere.
Let me put a United tint on this.
Go on then.
Ange Ball, at the start of the season, was the in thing. It was majestic. Tottenham with a great...
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Greatest team in the world. They're going to win the league. Mm-hmm. Now their own fans want them to lose to Man City to deny Arsenal the title, and they duly did it. Is Ange, but you know, Ange and Tottenham seem to have turned on each other. So I'm bringing the United lens to this. Is Ange a contender for the United job?
Oh God, no. No, he isn't, because he's not good enough. Like, again, when he got the job at Spurs at the end of the season last year and the start of this season, I remember doing a podcast and I was asked about it. And I said, I don't believe, my opinion, that Ange Postecoglou is good enough for the Premier League. That was my whole thing. And of course, then after that, Spurs went on a massive run, didn't they? And played like all this exciting football and started winning games. I think the thing is of Ange is that I don't know if he's really in touch with Spurs fans. Like, I don't really know if he is. I don't think he really understands why those Spurs fans were content to lose one game of football to make sure Arsenal didn't win a title. Because people might say, oh, a small-time club. Well, if United had to lose a game to make sure Liverpool didn't win the title, to then not have it rammed down our throats for years in the future by Liverpool fans, I kind of sympathise. I really, really do. But I think Ange to come out, he can't come out quite hard, Scott, didn't he? Like, oh, I have to reevaluate stuff. No, you don't. Go home and shut up. You know what I mean? Just get it. Understand what you're a football fan. We're all football fans. We all do understand that. Just keep your gob shut about it. But he couldn't, could he? And he was just like, oh, no, I've got to have to reevaluate stuff. And so, no, he didn't. No. Just go again next year.
No, but I think what he was talking about in that instance was that there were suggestions from inside the Tottenham camp that they wanted to, it wouldn't be the worst thing if they lost that game.
Yeah, but so if that's the case,
the fans can have an opinion, but if your own staff or whoever it is, it's not been confirmed. If your own staff are joking about not going out into a football match to win, is that not cause for reevaluation?
If it's something that's within your power, absolutely. So if it's staff that work for you, then yeah, get rid of them. Like, you know, but we know Postecoglou isn't that kind of coach at Spurs. He's a normal coach in the pyramid again. But I think the thing is that, again, if that's the thing, Scott, you don't go public with it. Just deal with it behind the scenes. And I think he's gone public to kind of be a little bit of a martyr. You know, I've seen people kind of go, oh, poor Ange. No, not poor Ange. Like, Ange, again, why didn't you put a defence out this season? You might have been top four, mate. You know, like, you know, don't play a super high line of like seven players and then leave a whole half of a pitch to get counter-attacked on. Like, maybe do something different. This is why I've had less sympathy for Eric at Man United. It's like, it's your choices, these things. So, I don't know, with Postecoglou, like, I got why Spurs fans didn't feel so bad that they lost to City. But you know what? I thought Spurs played quite well. Spurs played well in the game. It wasn't like they laid down and died for City. City are 10 times better than Spurs. So you did expect Man City to win that. And obviously now they're only a game away from winning the title again. Fourth time in a row.
How do you feel about that in a United sense?
I feel nothing. I feel zero. I'm more bothered about Man United business on a day-to-day thing as a football person. That's what I'm invested in. But at the same time, I think City have won all of these titles, and I think there are questions about how they've achieved that in their project. And I do hope that that comes to pass, and eventually that is someone official somewhere sees that. And if that's the case, because I remember reporting on this, Scott, 10 years ago, like, this is not new. This is stuff that's been going on for ages about sponsorship and one thing or another. Then maybe, just maybe, just maybe, just maybe, they get those titles taken off them, but I'm not relying on that. And I don't feel as passionate about Man City as I say I would do about Liverpool. I'd be much worse for me if Liverpool winning the title this weekend with Klopp in his final game. Like, we'd all have to go and emigrate and get out of the way. We're like, we don't want to see this. I don't want to be part of it. But, you know, City win their fourth title in a row. It's a little bit like, oh, well done. At least you didn't win the treble again. It's kind of like that. No, I don't feel a lot about it. And being honest, City, I think, probably are still the best team on paper, and they still go and do it. You just been to an awards ceremony with Phil Foden, winning that title.
He wasn't there, actually.
Winning that award that he couldn't be bothered to turn up for. It's okay. Like, I still look at Man City's team and I think that they are still the best football team. It's just, again, the questions around all the other stuff, which we won't go into, because we know Man City have been getting very upset about that recently and kind of putting stuff out there that they don't want to be called.
Apparently anything. That wasn't true.
Exactly. So it's kind of like, it's all very up and down with it. I think with City as well, is that they don't want to create more noise around that. They really don't want to kind of, because eventually they are going to have to stand up and have to answer the charges that are obviously still there at the moment.
So you want to talk about VAR as well? Sorry, we're going off in a different direction here. Would you really like us to talk about Brighton game? Rob, do you think United? Where do you think United will finish in the league? And we'll just maybe park it here. We'll talk about United. Like,
I think United are going to be. I think United are going to finish in the top eight.
I think that's guaranteed already.
Then I'm right. So there we go.
Yeah, you are right. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to finish in the top eight, and I'll be all right with that. Like, you and me have both talked about the Europa League dance. Like, if Man United beat City, I am not going to be celebrating that. Oh, United are now in the Europa League. No, it's good that you've won the cup, but I'm not going to be. Oh, I don't care about the Europa League. I just cannot care about it. And I don't care about the conference. I don't care about any of those things. I want to be in the Champions League, or I'd like Wednesdays and Thursdays off. Thank you very much. That's how I look at it. So we're not going to be in the Champions League. We're going to be in the top eight. That's the Premier League gone. I think our audience, Scott, as well, quite like us talking about other subjects, because we do talk about it anyway, don't we, in our other guises. We do talk about Premier League matters and European matters. So it's quite nice to inject a little bit of it in there. And VAR has been a big topic this week.
Let us know in the comments if you've made it this far, or in the reviews, if you don't like us talking about other wider topics and other clubs, because this is a Man United podcast, obviously. But the big VAR news this week, I hate talking about VAR, I really do. But in this instance, the fact that whether it's keep it or kick it, I don't mind this conversation. It's the granular, like, analyzing of every single decision that really gets on my nerves.
Mm.
But do you want to continue with the granular analysis of every single decision with video technology? Or should we just get rid of it and then have everybody lose their minds when referees get decisions wrong and then they go, why did we get rid of VAR? I can't believe it. Like, we brought VAR in for a reason. Maybe I've suggested which way I lean on this, but what do you think?
I have been always very pro technology, always. Again, I did an article 12 years ago called Techno Football. And what it was about was this, was about technology is catching up with sport. Sport is embracing technology. How can we use technology best to get correct decisions? I think it's absolutely clear, Scott, in the last 12 months, especially in the Premier League, is that the PGMOL have not done that successfully. They've turned VAR into this flag for people to wave when they don't like stuff. And we are so good at that in Britain. And as I said the other day privately to someone, but I'll say it here, you know, I can just imagine us getting rid of VAR and the rest of the world still having it. And it will be like Brexit, you know, and it's just, like, oh, we can't do this. We can do it better. We're the purest form of what, you know, and it's like, oh, Jesus, like what? Just... So with VAR, Scott, I think it does need tweaks. I think it does need to be looked at. And as you just described it there, kind of the granular kind of, you know, kind of exploitation of what is a rule and how do you interpret it? I think that has to stop. I mean, that has to stop because it doesn't help the game. I remember countering something that Gary Neville said when VAR was introduced. Gary Neville said, you know, if it takes 3-4 minutes to get to a decision, then he was all right with it because it's about the right decision. And my side of it was that I want the right decision, but I think within a time frame that if you don't do it within, say, a minute, then that you have to go with the on-field and you leave it. I'm absolutely cool with someone at a video monitor going, it's not clear on a monitor, so we're not making a call. What we've got instead, Scott, is that we get referees making bad decisions and then VAR going, well, we can't help. Sorry, you know, like we can't help. And then you've got other sides where there'll be a handball in the box and the referee will say, play on. And VAR will suddenly go, oh, hang on. Rule 794342 says player hand out here in unnatural position. What they need to do, Scott, is they need to change the rules to make VAR easier. So, as you said, the VAR debate is not really a debate. I think it's more of a case that you just need to use technology correctly. Years ago in the NFL, Scott, they had video replays and they got to that point where they stopped and went, well, you don't want to do this. It's slowing the game down too much. And then they introduced technology in a more sympathetic way so you can use it. And now it runs in the NFL fine. And it's the same with rugby. It's the same with cricket. If you'd said to people who love cricket 20 years ago that they would have cameras in stumps, they would have laughed at you and a snickometer. People would have gone, what? That you can't have. That's not pure. That's not cricket. If you get the technology right, it's fine. Then no one moans about it. No one moans about goal line technology today, Scott, because it works. And I think automated offside has proved in Europe this year that it works. So, like, use it. It takes 15 seconds to get a decision. And that's all we need. I think it's just that we're getting offside decisions that take like 4 minutes. And then we're getting 10 minutes of stoppage time at the end of games. I'm not down with that. I think that's rubbish. No one should be hanging around for a decision. I think it all should be done well within a minute, and if not quicker than that. Because we all see it and we all know it. We see the replays ourselves, don't we, within that time frame. We know that the decision is wrong. So I think that's what we need. And we need the PGMOL to be a little bit more... put some more leadership into it, because I really do think that a few of those guys should be resigning. I think they've made such a big mess of VAR that really new people should be doing it. They shouldn't be doing it.
It's jobs for the boys, really. I think that's been evident in some of the video or like audio analysis that's come out that's been leaked out.
It's frightening. Do you know what? We talked about this before, but when you hear the audio analysis, it's four people shouting at each other. And I know that they have to do it because it's on pitch, it's loud, but there was no clarity. And that doesn't happen in rugby. When rugby are talking about it, everything stops. The referee talks and we hear it to the person in the video replay. They talk back and it's calm. Yeah, you get the right decision. Football is like, it's like they're the players running around like nutters going, oh, look, you know, oh, is that handball, mate? Hang on, stop the game. It's like, it's that cannot be like that. I don't know how they put the product out there, VAR, and thought that was a good idea of how to do it. PGMOL said to us 2 years ago that they're setting a high bar. I don't think they've set a high bar. I think they've set a really low bar. And then they're trying to live up to it because English football needs this rough, tough kind of mentality and that we're not going to let technology get in the way of that. No, just use it right. And then let's see what happens. So I think that's where we are. I think it's really interesting that Wolves put that motion in, Scott, to say that they want to get rid of it, because I think, you know, 2 or 3 years down the line, Wolves might be getting relegated on a VAR decision if it's not given correctly. And that might lose their football club hundreds of millions of pounds. So I'm still pro VAR, but I do absolutely recognise that it needs to change. 100%. Like, the VAR we've seen this year has been absolutely unacceptable.
Yeah, I mean, I think they introduced the word maybe to their own detriment in the end. Clear and obvious. And it's now like they've moved so far away from clear and obvious that every subjective decision is taken minutes over deliberating. And it just doesn't benefit the game at all. They looked at how it's been implemented in European competitions, in international competitions, in other leagues, and they've gone, no, we'll do it our own way. We're the best. Yeah. Now they're bringing in automated offsides, finally, after they probably could have, after they got the Luis Diaz decision at Tottenham wrong, which was one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. But it's that thing. I said this on another show yesterday, Rob. You said there about giving a time limit on decisions. If you can't see that something is clearly wrong within a couple of replays, it's probably not that.
Yeah.
Not that
and it's
deep.
Cool. It's fine to say, you can't tell. And that's what's not there, isn't it?
Inconclusive. Like, if it's inconclusive, it's inconclusive. Newcastle should have had a penalty when Sofyan Amrabat trod on Anthony Gordon's Achilles in Wednesday's game.
But can I address that? Because it absolutely was. It was a penalty, wasn't it? But the replays were not clear and obvious. The replays were not until you saw that his sock had been ripped. But you can't use the sock being ripped as the reason for it. If you can't see it in the replay, you can see them coming together and you can see that he clips him. But you see it on like the 10th time. Like, I watched it loads and then convinced myself that it was a penalty. So that's exactly where VAR doesn't have to have this duty of care to get everything right. You can look at that and say, well, that's close. Do you know what I mean? It's supposed to be clear and obvious, like where someone trips someone or pulls someone down. How many times have you seen this year, Scott, like especially in the box, where a defender wraps his arms around an attacker and pulls him to the ground, and we're getting told that's a coming together? It's not. It's a foul. So I think this is where VAR needs to be a little bit more clear. I was going to say to you, Scott, shall I give you my kind of three tips as to what VAR can do to just fix all this?
Go for it.
Do you want to hear it or do you not want to hear it?
Yeah, we're on it. Let's
do it. Right. So let's do it. And it's all real clear stuff. This is what I would do with VAR if I was the boss. Yeah. So we're going to go to the daylight rule next year. Yeah. Daylight is going to change all of this. Is that if you go to the daylight rule and you make
is
sure,
that is that actually the case? Because I've seen that suggested,
on,
but like
being voted on, and supposedly Premier League have voted on it already and said that they're going to do it. So I believe is official. Yeah. So they're going to go to the daylight rule, and that was something that Arsene Wenger
looking forward to the deep defenses. Can't wait.
So Arsene Wenger said 2 years ago, he said it was his idea because he works for FIFA, doesn't he? And he said, go to the daylight rule, because we used to have that 20 years ago when I was a kid playing football. It was all about daylight. When someone looks along the line, it was all about, is there daylight between the two players, the attacker and the defender? I think if you go to that rule, it makes offside so much more easier for people to kind of understand that it's not just an inch. It's about, is there space between them? Now, it's still something that you have to measure, but it's better. It means the attacker has got the advantage. Go to the daylight rule. It'll make it easier, especially with automated offside. That's one thing I would do straight away, right? That's a real quick fix to get quicker decisions down the line. I think when we go to the referee and about talking about serious foul play, I don't want VAR to make the decision. I want the referee to go to the screen. I want the referee to go, that's a foul, you know, sliding tackle. I need to go to the monitor to make my decision. And what we're getting is a bloke at Stockley Park telling another bloke on a football pitch, you got that wrong. So what we need is a referee to use a monitor. This is what we thought VAR would be, is that referees would go, that was a close call, I'm just going to go double check it. It's what we see in other sports. I think that's a real quick fix. The other thing that you can do, Scott, is that you can have a timekeeper, right? So none of this nonsense anymore with the referee with two watches on, because that's what they have, yeah? Keeping clock, and then we get 10 minutes into it, and we get 10 minutes of injury time. It's not injury time anymore, is it? It's just stoppage time. Is that if you stop the game during injuries and you stop the game when there's timekeeping error, when we get to points, what other sports do, and then sometimes you can even put some time back on, Scott. Like someone's wasting time, the time you can put the time back on, like you see in basketball, then it works. If you do those three things overnight, VAR gets fixed by 90% for me. And you get no more 10-minute stoppage time, and we're all in grounds going, where's that come from? Like, it's been substitutions, one injury, 10-minute stoppage time. It wasn't like that before. So for me, there are three quick solutions with offside, serious foul play. And we get away from Stockley Park looking at decisions for 5 minutes, because that cannot carry on. Otherwise, Scott, do you know what? Get rid of VAR. If it's going to be like that, we don't want it like that. It was never designed to put an extra 10 minutes on the clock every single week. That was not what anyone wanted when they called for VAR to come in.
As it looks, this vote needs 14 clubs to vote for it, and I don't think we're going to be getting that. So I think Wolves' motion to scrap it probably isn't going to pass. I think there's a meeting in early June about this at the AGM. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look likely. I think there's other stuff that will be voted through at that point as well, the new rules around PSR and all that was suggested a few weeks ago. Let us know. Obviously, we've talked about United today. We've done a little bit on the wider scope of the Premier League and video assistant referee stuff, VAR. So let us know in the comments what you think. I understand the Wolves' argument for like not knowing if you've actually scored a goal after you scored a goal, because you're always like worried that it might get ruled out. I understand that, but I think the horse has bolted. So it's not.
What Wolves are asking for is that if you score a goal and there's no video technology and a referee and the linesman has put his flag up, they're saying they're happy to have wrong decisions. That's what they're saying, because everyone wants to celebrate. So I get that as someone in football stadiums going, it does take some of that away, but we can fix some of that, I think, if we tweak these rules. I don't think you have to go back to the dark ages just to think that you can't go forward with technology. So just about balance, Scott. What would you do, Scott? Would you keep VAR? I know you hate
absolutely. Absolutely. I don't like the granular... how we have to chat about it every week. There's one thing from every single game. Like, it should be... you can argue that we talk about it more nowadays with video assistant referees.
Absolutely.
Rather than what we did back in the day. But people forget just how much we talked about it when VAR wasn't a thing. Like, it was incessant. So annoying. Like, it was honestly... Like, just cast your mind back a few years. It was completely different. And the moaning about corrupt officials and this, like, and all of this stuff.
Every game.
I spoke to Harry yesterday, Arsenal fan, still talking to this day about when Rooney dived to win that penalty and Arsenal to break the 49 game unbeaten run. 20 years ago. And that's not the only thing. Like, to me, I think it's implemented wrong. I think the people who are operating it need to buck up their ideas or leave. Yeah. And you need to change the rules to just make this something added to football to enhance it, not something that you obsess over. And it just irritates me. It really does. But like, I know if VAR is implemented properly, it can be a good thing.
Definitely.
You know? Definitely. But we're not there. We don't operate like that.
No, and you have to look at what VAR should be for. I was there, Scott, the day that Didier Drogba was 2 yards offside, scored a goal for Chelsea at Old Trafford, and they won the title. You know, people forget that Man United lost the title because of that. I was there, and I could see it was offside. I couldn't believe it. To this day, I cannot understand how that was not flagged, because he was so offside. So, like, people forget that because you move on, don't you? But as you said, like, us working in this industry 10 years ago, Scott, all we talked about every single game was corrupt referees. Is the referee corrupt? And I was like, it's wrong because referees are not corrupt. Funnily enough, Scott, VAR was brought in because referees asked for it. Referees said, we need help to get these decisions right. So what are we going to do now? Just take it away from them because the administrators, like the PGMOL, have got it seriously wrong. You know, I always thought, as soon as the PGMOL said that they were going to do it different to the rest of the world, I knew straight away it was wrong. I knew straight away, I was like, this is going to be a mess. Again, it's the Brexit analogy, isn't it? We can do it better than everyone else. Well, maybe you can to an extent, but it doesn't mean it's what's right. And I think in Europe, automatic offside 2 years ago was voted out by the Premier League. They said, no, we don't want to do it. We think it's wrong. And in Europe, it's worked so well. Now we're having it. They voted for it. It's coming in, isn't it? So I think automated offside next year will make a lot of people feel better because we'll know very quickly if these decisions are right or wrong. And we do want offsides to be right, don't we? Surely, like in football matches, because that's the biggest thing in football, I think, is like the wrong flag. And we still need, I think, some of that protection because it's so easy to get those decisions wrong. But just those tweaks with VAR and having a daylight rule, I think that makes a big, big difference. And we need to test it and trial it and start it next season.
Please leave your thoughts in the comments. I know we've done a section of about 15, 20 minutes here on not specifically United. But, yeah, and like I say, let us know if you've got this far and you don't like it or you do like it and you want to hear more wider topics, then just let us know and we will adjust accordingly moving forward. But obviously,
we'll cover Scott. Yeah, that's what we'll do.
Spend most of our time taking mulling over United, but it's the end of the season. Brighton away at the weekend. If they don't beat Newcastle's result, or if Newcastle match United's result, whether both teams draw, or both teams win, or both teams lose, United are finishing eighth in the league, and they will have another chance to get Europa League in the FA Cup final on Saturday week. So we will see. We'll see what happens, but this could be the end of Erik ten Hag. One thing we haven't talked about, just before we finish, back to Man United. What did you think of Erik ten Hag's speech?
I thought it was really good. I was really good because I think it showed a determination and a focus that I haven't seen every minute of the day in this season. Like, I know this season he's been challenged with a lot of things, and I think he's got a little bit monotonous with his answers, but I think we kind of know that's kind of who he is. Not kind of criticizing him too much for that. But I think it was good that he took the microphone and said what he said, because kind of needs to be said. If you're the leader in that moment, you're the manager of the football club, you've got to be able to stir it up. And you know what I thought as well, Scott, was great, was that how many fans stayed behind after a season of discontent, a season that's been relatively negative in terms of results. I think United fans feel hope and optimism for the future, really do. I think there's a feeling that this team can be fixed, because we now got a structure behind it to fix it and within us. So, no, credit to Erik for that. I think you can also look at it this way, Scott. Was it a kind of goodbye speech? Like, I don't know. Just to kind of say, you know, I think I'm the man for the job. But because I did feel that after his presser after the game, Scott, he was very non-committal about next season. He was asked several times. And he really, 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 really didn't want to mention it. Like, he really didn't. And he got to a point where he was just like, these two games are these two games, and then that's that. So there we go. So I don't know, Scott, what do you think? Do you think Erik will be the manager next year? Do you think it was a little bit of a farewell speech?
I touched on it earlier. I really, really don't know. But I think what you just said there is definitely some credence to it. That struck me as well. But he was not the only person to obviously say goodbye. Goodbye in quotation marks. Anthony Martial and Rafa Varane are leaving. We'll talk about Rafa Varane in a little bit more depth, maybe on another show. But he is obviously, I think he might even feature before the season finishes. So maybe next week we'll discuss about him. But he could even make the bench, I think, for the Brighton game this weekend.
Yeah.
And imagine.
Well, Yeah. Imagine, one image of him, the image of him in on the pitch. Did you see that?
Yeah.
The image of him afterwards. I don't know if people see that. Go and have a look it up if you haven't seen it. That did touch me because I think the thing is he did have an ambition to play for Man United and he has. And it was interesting that everyone had gone home. He stayed at Old Trafford and went and sat in the centre circle long after everyone had left and just sat there. And, you know, we always criticise footballers, don't we, for being highly paid and not caring. I think that moment shows you that even these highly decorated footballers, they do care. And just to sit there in the stadium on his own in the centre circle, I think that kind of touched me a little bit.
Yes, as I say, we'll talk about that in a little bit more depth. Maybe we'll go through the squad audit that everybody seems to be doing later.
We have to do that show, don't we? Everyone's doing it.
I'm sure people want that. We've been asked for that in previous weeks as well. So that will be coming up. United's last game in the Premier League is coming up on Sunday. We'll be back after that to analyse it, digest it, look at the VAR decisions, probably all of that. I don't know. And then one other game, the FA Cup final, but we'll be back before that, obviously. From Rob and from myself, this has been the Promised Land podcast. Subscribe to our audio show on Apple and Spotify and give us a 5-star review as well. Watch us on YouTube where you can like the stream, subscribe, leave a comment and hit the notification bell so you don't miss a show. And follow us on socials at @_ScottSaunders, @_Rob_B and @TPLMUFC on X. And from Rob and from myself, thanks for listening, everyone. Let us know, get the feedback in the comment section. Do you like when we talk about non-Man United stuff or Tottenham? And
it's all
stuff.
It's all football.
But let us know, and we'll see you soon for another one. See you next time.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.